Why doesn't Mitch McConnell get in the back of a limousine, go back to Kentucky, and finish decomposing? Like,
welcome. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Cheap Wine and Screaming.
The podcast where we drink cheap wine and we scream.
Yeah. It's our first podcast, Crystal.
It's our very first podcast, Travis. We're coming at you like the fresh neophytes that we are. We're not going to talk about the 6 months of secret episodes that we've just not gotten around to editing.
But maybe one day we'll release those as like bonus pods or something.
Right. We can cut them up and make a quilt out of them.
Yeah, that would be fun. But it's our official first podcast. How do you feel about that? Feel good?
I feel okay about it. I feel unprepared as usual, but I want this to be like a low effort.
Right.
Yeah. I want this to be a low pressure thing. The first thing I want to get out of the gate is that this is not a news podcast. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to be a news source. If you're just go read the news.
Right. We'll get into that in a little bit, actually. But yes. Just go.
Yeah, I do have a rant about that. This is meant to be just a bucket in which to dump our anxiety and angst about when we read the news. Right. So it's like a book club for the news, basically, right? Like if you didn't read the book, you don't have to come. Mm-mm. And if you did and you gleaned more from it, if you read it more closely than we did, that's great. And please do let us know.
Right.
But this is a time to relax and to just scream at one another because we noticed at some point during 2020 that most of our conversations with each other were just calling each other and screaming about the news.
Mm-hmm. Which is, to your point, relaxing and cathartic. Right.
True to millennial form, we were like, this should be a podcast.
Correct. Yeah. We're ultimate chuggy. We're drinking wine and we're recording a podcast. I don't know.
Top chug.
Yeah, top chug. What are you drinking today, Crystal? What kind of wine?
I'm drinking water because I didn't make it to the store.
You're drinking water.
I'm drinking the cheap wine that comes out of my faucet.
You better call your friend Jesus up.
Turn
that into some wine.
I'm gonna need Is he like on DoorDash? Can he?
Yeah, he's like an Uber. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh God, that's gonna be a thing. Oh no.
Did you know that priests could just like make any body of water holy?
Really?
Yeah, like priests will just be like, you know, oh, here's a bucket of like, you know, like a Gatorade bucket worth of holy water. Boom, done. Fill up your water bottles, everyone. It's holy now.
Is there an upper? I feel like I've encountered this conversation on like Reddit before. Is there like an upper limit? Can they make?
Oh. Like Salt Lake City, could it all be holy? Or like, yeah, Salt Lake. I don't know. That's a
could they
question.
Bless a cloud? Could they bless the rains down in Africa?
God damn it. Probably. I think probably. Yeah.
Okay.
We should probably ask an expert. I am not an expert in blessing things or Catholicism. But yeah, I don't think there would be a limit. In which case, now that I think about it, it's pretty fucked up that they haven't blessed, you know, the Pacific Ocean.
Right.
Like, they should probably just do that.
I mean,
I don't know what the water to Pope ratio is, though.
Yeah.
To priest ratio.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
Side like camp. A dilution problem. Yeah, maybe if they would bless the damn ocean, it wouldn't have a trash island the size of Texas in it.
Right.
I don't know, though. The Catholic Church blessing things has not had a good track record so far.
No, no. I mean, they blessed me when I was born, and look at me now. Here we are.
Fair. That's fair enough.
Did work. So.
I am, by the way, I'm taking your word as authority on every Catholic matter. You are the source on this podcast. I will not be fact-checking anything that you have to say about Catholicism whatsoever.
Perfect. Yeah.
Take it all as fact.
I have the Catholic Wikipedia. Thank you. That is very my good. Expertise.
Very good. What were we talking about? Okay. The media.
The media.
Let's talk about that.
Okay.
So You asked me if anything in particular had bothered me about the news lately. Here's the thing that bothers me about the news every day.
Okay.
And this is a thing, this is a thing that we've talked about before. I recently put a video on TikTok about this. And here's the thing. Backstory. I get the shit scared out of me when I have videos go viral on TikTok. Like, I tell people like you about it.
Yeah.
Which I guess you're not an outside of TikTok friend, right?
No,
you're just also someone that you know that I know from real life.
Right.
But I tell outside of TikTok people about this. I will just send them a screenshot of how my video has fucking 350,000 views, and I'll just be like, ah, and they'll be like, yeah, congratulations. And I'll be like, no, you don't understand. I need a drink. How do people deal with this?
Yeah, that's a lot.
2,500 people are talking to me at the same time. I don't have enough cheap wine to be screaming this much. So I had a video go a bit viral on TikTok recently, in which I made a bit of a commentary on a couple of facts that are I find to be loosely related that I think should be the beginning of a conversation. Which is, it's kind of a known thing that the average reading level in the United States, right, if you're to take it by sort of grade, and there's a number of scales that you can use to like grade things, grade pieces of writing by reading level, the average reading level in the United States is 6th or 7th grade, right? Which means essentially that every grade after middle school is a waste of taxpayer dollars. That is not my opinion.
Okay, we're going there.
It's not my opinion. This is not that kind of podcast.
I was like, wow, no. this is gonna go off the deep end.
Really. Oh God, I'm already there. I'm so far off it. So there's that fact, and then there's the fact that is a bit less researched, a bit less substantiated, but still has been suggested by some studies, which is that the average sort of news article is written at about an 11th grade level.
Right.
And it's obviously not this cut and dried, but like when you put those facts next to each other and you just stand back and you kind of like squint, it becomes really terrifying.
Yeah.
That like our systems for like delivering reality to the public are like so mismatched with the needs of the public that these enormous fucking understanding gaps can just like form and grow and be exploited, right? And I think that like something that I find really troubling is that there's an awful lot of people who are of the opinion that like, oh, well, everybody who can't understand news articles, who doesn't understand like, you know, the basis for all of the basic concepts of all of these things needs to just like buck up and get it together and figure it out. And like, that's okay, fine. But when there are like a lot of giant organizations that are profiting a great deal from providing these people with like alternative and often for them more digestible narratives about how the world works, you can see how people are not going to put in the effort to do that, right? And so we end up with this sort of quandary where we have this like mass misinformation problem, and a lot of the people who think it's a huge problem and who think that, you know, who think it's an emergency level disaster for America, a lot of those people even are like, well, we just need to wait for the problem to solve itself because it makes me mad. I don't know how to have this conversation with those people, because like I can understand where a lot of those people are coming from. Like, I don't personally think it's the responsibility of any individual person to like sit down on the rug with everybody who doesn't understand critical race theory and hold their hands until they get it. Right? Like, it's not your responsibility to explain to somebody why, for example, they should care about other people, or why, you know, Well, you can't just assume that somebody is a criminal or a predator because of their identity, right?
Right.
Like, but it does have to be somebody's job. And right now, it really seems like it's nobody's job. And that's where the floor falls out from under me, kind of. And it freaks me out. And I really feel like, you know, the only systems that we have in place to kind of solve these mass education problems, right? To like, to fix the gap between what you learn in school and what you need to know to exist are mass media.
Right.
And that system is so dysfunctional for serving that purpose.
Yeah. It's also completely decentralized. Like there's a lot of barriers to entry, right? Like
Right.
within the legacy like media apparatus, right? One of them is like a pure knowledge, barrier. A good example, I think I told you this when the Suez Canal ship was stuck in the or the Ever Given was stuck in the Suez
The dig
Canal.
boat.
Yeah, the dick boat. I forgot about the dick of it all. That's hilarious. But the Washington Post, for example, was using these like really obscure nautical terms in their coverage of it. And like through context clues that, I can kind of figure out like what was going on in that article. But like I shouldn't have to do that. And then also just like there's a twinge of like prestiginess that I think is like unwelcoming, right? Like the New York Times, the Washington Post, like even to some degree, like CNN or NPR even has a like cultural barrier too, right? Like you can see it in their
Yeah.
advertisers. You can see it in like the way their journalists and their workers interact with others on the internet. You could see it in the houses that they live in, right? Like you could see it in the share price, literally, right? And that is another barrier too, right? Is just costs. And I'm not saying that like journalism and news should be free. I think that's an interesting like philosophical question. But the facts of the matter are that like it costs money in order to do like investigative in-depth like reporting that like some of those legacy, companies participate in. But all of those barriers combined creates the like fake news paradigm that we are currently suffering in, right? Like like not meeting people where they are, costing too much money, and like holding yourself on a pedestal has like alienated exactly what you said, the public from the media, right? And it's funny because like there's such like navel gazing that happens with like journalists, especially during the Trump era. And I'm not saying what they do isn't like important. It very much so is, right? And I'm glad that we had antagonistic, thoughtful, in-depth, ethical reporting that happened throughout those 4 years. But like constantly reminding the public that like the reason democracy isn't falling apart is because they exist is like just not true and also incredibly annoying. Like
Right.
it's just like complete like pandering. And I'm not saying that
Fair.
like they're exclusively doing that, but like that is like all of that together has just like created this alienation, right? Like there people don't want to like people have especially like if you look at it from political ideological lenses, like the New York Times has like bad brand awareness, right? Like so does
Yeah.
CNN, and so does and a lot of it has like that's more complicated than like all of these issues, right? And a lot of it has to do with like dishonesty by politicians attacking the media, which I do think is a problem. I just want to be clear there. But that has like just like contributed to this like wave of criticism that I think the media is rightfully taking, and they can't really climb out of it. And so instead, they're kind of like doubling down in their own echo chamber, you know?
Yeah, I think you point out something really important about like the sort of cultural problem of these really like established media organizations, right?
Yeah.
Because a lot of these publications either literally started, over 100 years ago,
right,
or they were born out of, you know, the ashes of another newspaper that started and disintegrated over 100 years ago, right? A lot of the sort of culture of the establishment journalism world has this, like, you know, linear continuity all the way back to a time when only certain people needed access to the news because only certain people were, like, voting and traveling and making investments.
Right.
Right. So, you know, you were writing a newspaper for the sort of merchant class. Right. And I don't know that they necessarily really stopped doing that. It seems like, you know, it seems like so much of the journalism that gets done by these organizations makes it really clear that everybody in the writing room, or whatever it is called, it makes it really clear that everybody who worked on this story is, like, you know, a third generation master's degree holder, right? Like,
yep.
Like, you've never met a person on food stamps, and if you did, you didn't actually see them, right?
Right.
And that's a broad generalization, right? But I just remember, you know, I remember things like growing up and listening to, like, NPR on the radio and stuff, and hearing these, like, financial advice segments, right, where they would say things like, did you know that if you get your coffee, if you make your coffee at home instead of getting it down at the cafe every morning, you can save $2,000 a year? And I was just, like, you know, sitting there as a kid, like, listening to this stuff, just like, who the hell are they talking to?
Right.
Like, who, like, my family can't afford to have coffee every day. It doesn't matter who makes it. Like, we can't afford to have coffee every day, even if we get it at the fucking food bank, right?
Yeah.
And, like, there's this weird schism in a lot of the sort of, like, nonprofit sector between, like, oh, yeah, we want to do good. We want to give back. We want to provide for those who don't have. And that's sort of, you know, the ethos of NPR in a lot of ways is, like, we want to be public broadcasting. We want to be accessible for everybody. We want to be, you know, and then the culture within it is this very disconnected, you know, very sort of upper middle class, like, position, the, like, lens, right?
Yeah.
And I think that that's, it becomes this bubble, or it has become this bubble over a lot of years. And it seems to start to break when people, you know, create alternative media organizations, or when people break into it. There was a sort of crisis because people weren't buying newspapers anymore.
Right.
Everybody was freaking out, and they went on these huge drives where they were like, did you know that journalism is really important? Did you know that it's the only thing holding together the fabric of democracy? Did you know that we'll all descend into fascism if you don't buy a subscription to the New York Times? And did you know that your newspaper would be a lot more successful if you would make it more accessible to people? Like, if you would talk to not just the investor class, that would be cool. I think I heard, I've gotten a couple of statistics. I don't know how well-founded they are, but I think 72% of New York Times subscribers have at least an undergraduate degree.
Right.
And only 30%, about 30% of Americans have an undergraduate degree.
Right.
So, like, when your whole brand is, like, we're holding together the fabric of America, it's like, who are you defining as America? Like, if you're trying to appeal to the American people, TM, but your readership demographics are not representative of that group of people, then you're making selections about who you're writing for. And you, maybe you're not making those consciously, but you're making them.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the content is a reflection of the customer, right? And again, I think it's a little unsavory to, like, think about it. If you think about it too long, it's, like, kind of gross that, like, the media is, like, essentially, like, exists, like, under, like, our capitalist system, right? Like, these are businesses that we're talking about. Even NPR, like, they are a nonprofit, but they have to engage in, like, advertising. They have to engage in, like, capitalist-like behavior in order to sustain, right? And so that includes, that distills into their content being a reflection of who is paying for it, right? And so like a lot of it is through a white middle class lens, right? And that is not the reality of America, right? The like average mean like American is not white or middle class, right? And so it creates those further divides. And I definitely agree with you that like it's a problem in many ways, but I think the biggest way, like I think you and I can agree that like in theory and for like for the most part, like the things that the New York Times does are important, right? Like that the information that like right. the NPR does is important for our democracy. Like that's not like what we are arguing against, but like but its importance is being diminished by the fact that it is not accessible and therefore it is becoming more obscure and like and having less like influence. And again, like I don't want to necessarily convolute like the New York Times with like prestige or like the gold standard of journalism or anything like that. And I think you and I like to shit on the New York Times a lot. there's a lot of other like they're kind of like the scapegoat here.
Where they're the Band-Aid brand of like journalism, yeah, right? Like absolutely. they're the household name.
Right, but the issue lies that like the American public has issues with that. Like insert all of the barriers that you and I mentioned earlier, right? And so like if our like democracy, quote unquote, is hanging on by a thread and the New York Times is the only one that's holding it up, like that is an issue in multiple ways. But like, I think the biggest way is just like distillation of like correct information, right? Like to your point, like the media itself is like the most efficient way to like get things done, right? To like explain to people what is happening. Every news story is not going to show up as like a emergency alert on your phone, right? Like that's just not like that's not going to happen. Or on the TV, right? Like news happens fast. Information is like consistently flowing, and to get that widespread to like multiple people is important for institutions, nationwide institutions, like media institutions to exist, right? But the problem is that the most of the public doesn't necessarily trust those institutions anymore. Maybe not trust, they just don't follow them, or they don't know that they exist. They don't necessarily know what is all encompassing within the New York Times, the brand, right? Or what they think that CNN is fake news, or they don't trust the Washington Post because it's owned by Jeff Bezos, or like insert like, you know, whatever criticism of the national media. And so like what you described earlier is exactly what propagates this issue, is like, you know, what's free and ad supported is like some fucking crazy conspiracy theory tinfoil hat website that is available to you on Facebook. It's super accessible. You don't have to pay for it. And your aunt shared it, so it must be accurate.
Worldnewsnow.net.
Right, right. Right.
Which is the literal name of a source that my mom cited to me one time.
Oh. Yikes.
Right. Well, so it's a difficult conversation, right? It's a nuanced conversation. And I think that there's definitely a tendency in any conversation that even flirts with being quote unquote political, right? In any conversation that even like edges towards the shore of current events, there's a tendency to like divide into these like, you know, red team, blue team, black and white camps, right? Mm-hmm. Of like, are you pro establishment media or anti-establishment media? And like, I think that that's sort of symbolic of the problem, right? I think that that's sort of, you know, like people have come to mistrust nuance so much because nuance is where people spin things. Nuance is where people prime you. Nuance is where people, you know, pick and choose which people to interview and which facts to give you. And I think that that's contributed to this tendency to be just like, okay, whatever gut feeling I get from this headline, I'm just going to go and sit with that sort of team of people. But I think it is a nuanced conversation, right? It's possible for like mom to be really good at supporting you emotionally, but also really, really bad at like respecting your boundaries, right?
Yeah.
Like right. It's possible for an organization to be good at one thing and bad at another thing, for it to be a net good. And I made the mistake of saying this on TikTok one time.
Oh, that nuances exist? That it's real?
Well, I made the mistake of saying that public information organizations like NPR and PBS and like the library system may have contributed to us not falling directly ass first into fascism under Donald Trump, because they were like, you know, not privately owned, or at least not directly privately owned organizations where people could access information.
Yeah.
And a couple of people were like, no. I used to work at a library and they were very mean to me there. And I'm like,
wow.
Or they were like, NPR is funded by wealthy donors, so you're a class traitor. And I'm like, dude.
Yeah.
Listen, saying that something isn't fascist is not the same as saying that it is perfect. And we really need to get past that mindset. Like.
Yeah. Well, that's the part of the problem too, is the way that we consume media is largely through social media, and like, or it, that's our gateway into it, right? And so social media is not conducive for nuance, right? Like it's hard to provide nuance on, like, for example, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict on a minute long TikTok, or 280 characters right. on Twitter, right? And so it just is, people who are like chronically online especially have just like created a black and white world around themselves, and that bubble is going to eventually burst. But
as a chronically online person, yes, absolutely. I mean, it's hard, because like in some ways there has emerged a sort of very reasonable intolerance of some things in recent years. Right, I think there are a lot of people, at least in my generation, who grew up thinking, oh yeah, every opinion is valid. It's just there's some that I don't agree with. And America is all about having everybody's valid opinions be allowed everywhere all the time. And for some people, not myself to be clear, for some people that evolved and emerged into we should let Nazis be on Twitter. And like,
right.
No. No, but explaining to people that nuance is not about letting anybody who wants to be loud just like act like they're right whenever they want, and command a following of people whenever they want. Nuance is not about like rehashing conversations that have already been resolved. Which, in case anybody is wondering, the conversation about whether genocide is okay has been resolved. Right. Like the conversation about, like, you know, whether the Aryan race descended from like 30-foot tall Nordic giants has been resolved. We don't need to rehash that conversation. We don't need to give space to that conversation. Like, we don't need to do that. People, right. We have the internet now. If you want to have that conversation, you can go look it up and watch it be had and watch it get resolved. But an awful lot of people don't want to do that. An awful lot of people don't want to actually learn what they're talking about. And they just want to go on the internet and like have a spicy take, because that makes them feel powerful, but also because that's a fucking industry, right? Which is how you get things like, you know, televangelists, right? Yeah. Which is how you get things like people who didn't actually go to seminary school and don't have any idea what they're talking about, who are like, biblical history is this, and I can just make up whatever I want as long as I'm wearing a suit and smiling real big, and confirming people's biases, they will just send me their money, right? Nuance is not giving a platform to people who are loud and wrong. That's not what it is.
Yeah. Well, I think what kind of contributes to the problem as well is that like the systems in which we participate within social media do not reward nuance, Right. Like if you have like a medium take on something, like you're not going to get a lot of engagement. Right. If I went on Twitter and I was like, oh my God, new Olivia Rodrigo album. Pretty good. I liked it. It was fun. You know, I might get a few likes, but if I say this album is a masterpiece, I have not heard something as prolific since, you know, Fiona Apple's debut, you know what I mean? Like if I like pitchfork the shit out of it onto 280 characters on Twitter, like I'll probably get a little bit more engagement. Right. And the same happens with the kind of like both extremes. And so, you and I have talked about this before, but like Twitter used to be, you described it to me once as like literal shit posting, right? Like, oh, I am on the toilet, or I am in line at Walgreens, or like, you know, things like that. And then we sort of like made fun of that so much that like now Twitter is just exclusively hot takes, right?
Right.
And that's about it.
And it's the fucking engine of American politics.
Right. And to your point, like what you were describing with the United States population and 30% only have a bachelor's degree, less than that have a Twitter account, you know? But it still drives the conversation because most
of them. Is that true? I'm live fact checking you.
Oh yeah, please do. I would be surprised if it was over like 20%. But like most of the media is on Twitter, right? And so like it drives the conversation so much. Like to the detriment, right? Like sometimes what people tweet is news. And that is a little insane to me.
So, apparently, according to Pew Research, 22% of US adults say they use Twitter. When was this? 2019.
Wow.
I bet it's more now because pandemic and everybody's on Twitter now.
It's less now that Donald Trump is not on there.
You think so?
I don't know, actually. I
how many followers did he have?
Like 73 like, million.
What?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Wait. Are you telling me that the number of people that voted for him is the same number of... That's not fair because I was also hate following him out of caution.
Same. Oh, I'm sorry. I exaggerated it. It was... that's Instagram. He has 24 million followers on Instagram.
But let's talk about Twitter though, right? Because you're absolutely right. In a lot of ways, Twitter has become a better news source than the news, which is, I think a lot of people find really troubling. I find it troubling, not necessarily because, you know, Twitter bad, to be clear.
Yeah.
Twitter bad in a lot of ways. It's not ideally suited to be a news source, and it shouldn't, you know, if you're getting your news exclusively from reading tweets, probably read a little bit further if you can, right?
Seek help, please. I'm happy to remediate that with you.
Right, but like there's, you know, it's more accessible. It's more immediate in a lot of ways. It's more customizable, right? If I'm following like Apple News or whatever, you know, like half the time it's going to be like, here's a thing that happened. And then also we discovered a new species of snail in the Mediterranean. Isn't that neat? And I'm like, I feel like I'm missing stuff. I feel like, there's shit that you're not covering. I feel like there's push notifications I am not getting about world events. But you go on Twitter and it's like, I can follow people who are covering the shit that's not getting covered in mainstream outlets. I can follow people who are on the ground covering things like, you know, indigenous issues where like every fucking day, some or another company is trying to put a subdivision on such and such, you know, unceded territory. Right.
Right.
And where is that? Where else do you get that? Right. This is something that I've been trying to, that I've been puzzling over for a long time. It's like, how do I aggregate the news that I want to get without it being extremely overwhelming, without it being a constant barrage of immediate takes on every single thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's a question you've asked me, I think, once or twice, but I think it's an organic conversation. Like, what is your news diet?
Right. Is your news diet organic?
Right. Yeah. That's, yeah, which is a whole nother issue. But what is yours?
Probably get all of these GMOs out of your news diet because you don't know what they're going to do to you.
But for real, like, where do you, like, it sounds like you use Twitter as a news aggregator, which I think is actually pretty smart. If my Twitter algorithm wasn't completely, like, fucked up by, you know, film takes and Beyonce stan tweets, I would also do the same, I think. But, like, where are you getting your news?
To be clear, my GMO comment, I have no leg to stand on that. I am shoveling frozen dumplings into my face as we speak.
GMOs are a really good example of the left just, like, engaging in the runaway train of pseudoscience. But that's another podcast.
That's another podcast. Right. Well, honestly, I think to carry the metaphor forwards, right, I would say that my news diet right now is just snacks.
Right.
Like, I don't really have meals anymore. I don't really have a regulated, you know, I feel like sort of our parents' generation, you put the news into your routine. You sit down and in the evening, you know, you watch the news, or in the morning you read the newspaper or whatever, right? And you sit there and you read it and you digest it, and, you know, maybe it stays with you for the rest of your day, but, like, you can go and do other things. But I think something that happened definitely to me over the course of the pandemic is, like, I started to become aware of so many issues and so many sort of genres of issue that I was just completely unaware of before, that there's no good pipeline for. And so what emerged was this feeling of needing to be on Twitter or TikTok or whatever constantly to, you know, catch everything that comes through so that you don't miss something and find out in 2 weeks that you're misinformed and you're, like, you know, tone deafly ass stumbling your way into a topic completely without knowing that you are, right? Or without being informed about it. And, like, it's hard to it's hard to compartmentalize when it's just chaos like this. And it's just, like, the way that I think the way that a lot of people consume news now is just kind of grazing. We live in a sort of push notification, you know, the 24-hour news cycle kind of environment now. And news happens live. And that's extraordinarily overwhelming, right? Like, the human body can't take that.
Right.
It's literally a full-time job to stay informed about all of the shitty things that are happening.
Right.
And it's overwhelming, but it also feels like, holy shit, nobody's doing this. Why is nobody paying attention to these things? If I can't do anything about them, at the very least, I need to be paying attention to them. But, you know, I really think that the summation of all of this is that something's got to give soon. I think, like, there really is a vacuum for a more kind of, like, organized method of aggregating current events, of aggregating news, right? Yeah. That isn't going to come through this lens of, like, heavy bias towards a paying readership, or heavy bias towards an algorithmic bubble or whatever, right? Like, obviously it's impossible to consume news in an unbiased way, because at some point you have to make a choice about which news you're consuming and which news you're not, because there is news 48 hours a day.
Right. Yeah. That's an interesting point. Like, Twitter in some ways is a good, it's a good use of information, like real-time information. Sometimes, like, there is really good breaking news reporting that does happen on Twitter. But I think as, like, a general news aggregator, we're past the point of, like, retweet does not equal endorsement, right? Like, that's, like, the old Twitter, right? Like, it is now, like, it's hard to, like, get, like, factual based, you know, like, without, like, a twinginess of opinion. And I'm not saying that, like, that's necessarily a bad thing all the time, but, like, sometimes you just need, like, a distillation of information, which is probably, like, where I think journalists, like, are part of the problem with what you were describing earlier with the barrier to entry, right? Like, they forget that, like, so, like, your job is to distill information into, like, a digestible, like, way that the public can consume, right? Like, if a journalist is reading a, like, medical paper about like muscle protein synthesis. Like they're not going to include all of the like terminology, like the medical terminology into it, into the news story, right? They're going to be like, yo, Americans, eat more protein. You know, like that's what they're going to do. And that's like really their right. job.
Your job is to synthesize information.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think a lot of them forget that. That's what I do like to have Twitter for, especially when there's like breaking news, right? Like I was like I'm always chronically scrolling Twitter, but like I was obsessively scrolling Twitter on January 6th, right? Just so I could get real time information, right? I don't have to wait for an editor to look at somebody's article on the New York Times, right? Like I need to know what is happening right now because like my congressperson might be dead. Like,
right.
Like that, like I was worried about that. I was worried if there was going to be continuity of government, right? And right. so like Twitter was like the place for us to like go to in order to get like real-time information. But like in terms of like a solution for aggregation of all of these different sources, I'm not sure it's the best one. And I'm not sure that one exists, right? Like I do think it would be beneficial for us to have like a Netflix for news. Right.
Right.
which sounds weird, but like it is important to be able to graze like that. Right. Like I actually have come around a little bit to Apple News, not necessarily from like a pure informational standpoint. I'm an Apple News Plus subscriber now.
Okay, Travis. Okay. But mostly, this is cheap whine and screaming. This is not mid-grade Shiraz and pleasant discussion.
Right. But mostly I like it for its things that like, which is also an interesting conversation about like what is news and what isn't, right? Like what I read on Apple News Plus is like a Vanity Fair profile of AOC or like an article about CrossFit and men's health, or you know what I mean? Like there's a whole bunch of like different things that you can kind of engage in. It's basically like a massive magazine subscription. And so is that news? No. Do I use it for leisure? Yes. Is it called Apple News? Yes. And so like, it's more of like a library that I pay for as opposed to like a news source that I pay for. And I do pay for news sources, right? Like, I am a New York Times subscriber. But what I wanted to get at is I'm also like a Denver Post subscriber, right? And like what is nice about the Denver Post is that like you don't need like a master's degree and like a Pulitzer and like MacArthur Genius Grant in order to like be a journalist there, right? And so like I can relate a lot better. I can relate geographically a lot better, mm-hmm. right? Like if they tell me, oh, this bar in Capitol Hill is going to close. Like, I know what bar that is because I live down the fucking street from it, right?
Right.
If they, you know, like if they tell me that like Red Rocks is going to reopen for the season, I like to go to Red Rocks because I live, you know, close to it. And I think people forget that a little bit when they're consuming news, right? Like politics have grown in scope to be nationalized, right? But like the thing that affects you politically the most is like what is local. And same with news, right? Like that is what like affects your direct life overwhelmingly, right? Mm-hmm. Is like what is going on in your city, in your state, in your county, on your block, right? Like mm-hmm. like next door as a news source is kind of an interesting thing, right? Like that happens a lot. Like people will post like, hey, just a heads up, my car got broken into on this block.
Right.
Just a heads up there, everybody who lives on this block, right?
Right. And I also think that like there's been a sort of awakening of interest in local politics in recent years that has really changed in a lot of places what is covered in local news, right?
Yeah.
I think that like when you and I were growing up, at least to me, local news had this reputation as being like, you know, feel good stories at 6 o'clock, right? Like, right. Oh, local boy breaks world record for chewing gum for the longest or whatever, right? And right. then also we have a new mayor. Isn't that nice?
And the Broncos won last week.
And the Broncos won, and here's my mom's butter cake recipe. Yeah.
Right.
And it was just kind of like, oh, nobody cares about this new city ordinance. It's posted on the door anyway. Like the people who actually care will show up at the city council meeting. We don't need to talk about that. But I think that there has been a shift. And I don't want to say that this stuff was never covered in local news. Obviously it was. But I think that there's been a shift in how much people care about these things on a local level. I think there's been a shift because I think for a long time, a lot of people felt like, well, nothing happens on a local level. There's nothing happening on a local level. But I think over the last few years, so many people have started to become aware of how much sort of local politics really affects the day-to-day lives of individual people, and how much of a vacuum there is there. Yeah. You know, how often really shady people run for local office unopposed, for example. I think that there's been a lot of like terrible decision making that has come down to really obscurity through apathy. People just not paying attention to what these people are doing, to what, you know, laws are getting written and passed on a local level, just because they, you know, their day-to-day life doesn't involve that. And you know, I can remember plenty of moments where myself and like even the older people in my life who paid attention to things like the local news would feel blindsided by like new ordinances that didn't feel like they were fair or made any sense. You know, like remember in Colorado when that law got passed that like you can't be in the left lane unless you're passing.
Yeah.
And we all kind of like woke up the day that that passed and our parents were like, what is this? This doesn't make any sense. And it's like, why didn't you fucking vote on this? Why didn't you say anything? Why didn't you call your, why didn't you call the governor? Why didn't you I'm 12. I can't like, right? Well, it's because, you know, they were watching the nightly local news about how so-and-so, you know, got a hole in one in golf and isn't that cool. Right.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. I think there is like a heightened awareness of local politics. I think it's because it's often used as a proxy to national politics, right? It's just easier to engage on like your mayoral race. And like in Colorado, like a lot of those races are like nonpartisan, quote unquote. The bunny ears doing a lot of work there. just in definition only, right? But we can use those opportunities to like take a stance, to put, like to dig our flag further deeper down into the ground, right? Like when the city says, when Mayor Hancock Endeavor says, we will not be cooperating with ICE, he's doing that as a proxy to the national conversation, right?
Right.
Which I'm not saying that's like a bad thing per se, but I think it in the nation, the federal level, the nationwide politics like really is doing a lot more influencing on the city and like local politics that we want to really talk about, right? Like the in an ideal world, I think politics would be middle out, right? Like it would have like the population would have influence on the local and federal level, right? Really what's happening is it's top down, which I think has its benefits, right? Like I do think like what you said, like people are engaging, more people are running for office than ever before, right? We had a record number of women win House seats in the last election, right? Like we have people from historically marginalized communities being represented in, you know, in city councils and in, you know, county government and in state government. And that's awesome. And I think that's a great side effect of like the nationwide conversation. But I hope it's sustainable, right? Like I hope that we kind of wake up from these like political rose colored glasses one day and just say, okay, like these are important to us. Like this is no longer it's no longer like a litmus test. It's no longer a reaction. It is a value, right?
Mm, yeah. Let's talk about top down politics. Actually, okay. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about the hierarchy that exists.
Yeah.
Because I think that touches on the kind of career pipeline that I think has shifted in recent years. I think you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
So
pour another glass of wine for this one.
Oh Christ, Jesus. So I think that sort of like the political career has shifted in recent years. Now, I didn't follow politics that much when I was a fucking fetus. So I can't say for sure whether this has been the trajectory, but from my own perspective, it seems like some people were like, I'm the mayor of Weed, California, or whatever. Right. And that's my job. And that's what I do for a living. And then some people were career politicians. Some people were like, I'm going to be the mayor of this town. And then I'm going to be, you know, on the city council of a bigger town. And then I'm going to be the governor. And then I'm going to run for Congress. And then maybe I'm going to be the president. And then you retire.
Right.
There seem to be a lot of people who have realized that politics is a hot button issue right now. It's very popular. People are very into it. And if you just outrage enough people and cuss out the right people, there are a lot of conservatives that will follow you to the fucking grave. And you can whip up a base doing that and, you know, run for fucking Congress on that basis and then leave Congress with an enormous Twitter following and go start a fucking radio show or go start a YouTube channel or go start a news network or, you know, of people who will trust you at your every word because they feel like you're, you know, this soldier standing up to the big bad leftist media that's trying to tell them that their reality is wrong, which is kind of disgusting, right? You have people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert who seem to pretty clearly be Congress people for the sake of outrage politics, for the sake of building their following.
Yeah.
Which is why we created a segment called Boebert Watch.
We did.
Should we do the theme song?
Boebert Watch.
Boebert
Watch. Yeah.
We're gonna leave that in.
Yep. Yeah.
Travis is a composer. He made a real song for this. But we're not putting it in.
I won't be taking it. Yeah, that was the song. It's called improv, folks. Look it up.
What happened this weekend Overwatch, Travis? Do you know?
Well, I just want to touch on one thing real quick too, like just about like what you described in terms of like the pipeline. It's not exclusive to the right. Like
yes, like, of course.
Like not in terms of like the pipeline for careers, but like what the people on the right do that influences the media, right? Like I think CNN and by extension Warner Media and by extension AT&T, like were salivating when like Marjorie Taylor Greene wanted to talk about Jewish space lasers, right? Like that's like that moves papers, that moves ratings, right? Like the negative feedback loop that exists within the US media is just like so fucking toxic. And it's a huge problem, right? Like, and I do think you're right. Like what you described, like the career pipeline, the trajectory of how somebody ascends to power on the right is just like completely gross. And like and what that means and what it looks like and like what that traditionally has looked like to what it is now is like really, I think, fascinating, right? Like I think Marjorie Taylor Greene would rather be like Ben Shapiro than Dick Cheney, right? Because like Dick Cheney had like, you know, power, but like Marjorie Taylor Greene just wants profile. Mm-hmm. So it's just disgusting. But this week, to answer your question, well, let's talk about, let's go light first and then we'll go heavy. and by light, I mean the entire Boebertarian caucus in the House of Representatives.
Wait, let's go in the shallow end first.
Right, yeah. This is the shallow end, everybody. Prepare yourselves. Getting fined for not wearing masks on the House floor. And to be clear, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, said, if you are vaccinated, you do not have to wear a mask. We are going to align with the CDC guidelines, which is a whole nother issue that we will not get into right now. But she said, you know, this is what we're going to do. If you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask. If you are not vaccinated, you need to wear a mask. And Lauren Boebert decided to not wear a mask on the House floor. And then she got fined $250 and was told by the sergeant at arms of the House that if she were to do it again, that the fine would be $5,000. And so instead of like, you know, just putting on a piece of fabric over her fucking mouth, she decided that she was going to rip that letter from the sergeant of arms up a cop, and throw it in the trash and then post it on Twitter.
This is what I think would be called, like stress laughing. Is this like a fawn response? I don't know what this is. For some reason, people who listen to this podcast are going to notice that very often we will laugh when something is just extremely hard to process.
Right.
Jesus Christ.
There's a lot of layers there, right? Like, this is just a really good...
this is such a cross-section. Like,
it is. Well, yeah, because she's not vaccinated, right?
This is the sampler plate.
It is.
This is the Lauren Boebert sampler that you get on Valentine's Day. Walgreens.
At Applebee's.
Yes. Oh, God. Yes. It has the Southwest egg rolls. Right? It has the chicken strips. It has the two chicken strips that are very dry.
The really bad spinach artichoke dip.
Yeah. It has a boat of celery. Which is the vegetarian option at Applebee's.
Where are you at on Applebee's? Are you a fan or?
I can only share my own personal, very myopic experience of Applebee's. This sidebar is going to only be like 30 seconds. Then we're going to get back to the atrocities of Lauren Boebert. So here's my personal experience of Applebee's. One time I went there for a trivia night with some friends. And the guy doing the trivia didn't show up. And so there just was no music at Applebee's. I want you to sit in the discomfort of picturing that for a second. We're just sitting in a silent Applebee's.
Oh my God.
And this thing that they've started doing, which is where they're leaning into the In the Neighborhood brand. And so they've just covered every restaurant in like, I don't know how they get this stuff, but they just go out and they find like random memorabilia from the town that doesn't make any coherent sense whatsoever. Right. There's in the Fort Collins one, there's just a picture of a police car.
Right.
Because it says Fort Collins on it. They're like, look, local landmark, police officers.
I put Applebee's in the same realm as like a Chili's, which some of our friends are huge fans of.
I am more amenable to Chili's than Applebee's because I think Chili's knows what it is about.
Right, right. Chili's knows exactly what it's doing. Chili's has their hands around the throat of our friends, though. I just want to say. I won't name them by name. They know. If they're listening, they will know.
They will know. They know. You know what, though? Red Robin had a gingerbread shake once, and they can still have anything
Red Robin
from me.
I
not sponsored. Moving on. Lauren Boebert.
I love Red Robin. Go on.
Yeah. So, I mean, we can also bring up the fact that Lauren Boebert is one of the many, many Republicans, prominent Republicans, who went on Twitter after the CDC announced the mask guideline and said that she identifies as vaccinated, which
you didn't know about this? No. Oh.
Yeah. She identifies as vaccinated. They have one joke.
God damn it.
They have one joke.
Oh my God.
And holy shit, they're getting mileage out of it.
Right, right. Oh my God. We should define a Boebert real quick, because I think in the literal definition, it would be Lauren Boebert, right? But we're talking about this Republican caucus, specifically in the House, but not exclusive to the House, of you know how we have long COVID? We're going to call this long Trumpism.
Like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like it. I hate it.
Right, yeah, it's fucking terrible. But here we are. So like Lauren Boebert, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Madison Cawthorn, Matt Gaetz, Josh Hawley, Ted Cruz, etc. You name them. Those are that's who we're covering on Boebert Watch. And by covering, I mean screaming about.
Right, right. People like that who you know, the sort of person who if a Republican congressperson tweeted something like, you can't just change the Constitution, you would be like, oh, I wonder which of these people tweeted this.
Right.
If somebody is potentially a suspect, that's a Boebert. That's what a Boebert is. The reason we have chosen Lauren Boebert as
You can't just change the Constitution. We've never done that before.
Did she literally tweet that?
She did.
The reason why we've specifically chosen Lauren Boebert as the poster child, which is a term that I emphasize for this concept, is that we both are residents of Colorado.
Correct. Right. Yep.
And we are ashamed of her.
Yeah.
Which, to be clear, she represents the Western Slope.
Yeah.
Which is a different thing. They don't even get the same, like, precipitation systems as we do. It's
correct.
It's a different fucking country.
High desert. Like, there's a lot going on over there.
Yeah. There's if you need a ride out of Western Colorado, please give me a shout. I will be going through sometime soon.
Yeah, I mean, the most predictable thing happened, which was Lauren Boebert refusing to wear a mask on the House floor, and you know, here we fucking are. I hope she gets fined $5,000.
I mean, it doesn't matter. Her net worth is like $2 million or something.
Yeah, yeah, largely paid by the taxpayers for her forging documents about the travel that she did in her campaign. But
oh Christ,
yeah. So that's going on. Specifically, the meat of Boebert Watch, I think, that we should talk about would be the House voted to create a commission to investigate the root causes and the potential failings of what happened to the Capitol on January 6th, which is not unheard of, right? Like, we had a 9/11 commission. You can buy that book at Barnes & Noble if you want. it is published. We have commissions for things like this. It is commonplace. It is an important process for us to go through. That way, something like what happened on January 6th does not happen again at the United States Capitol, right? Like, it is important for us to identify what precisely, specifically, detailed went wrong that day. And how can we fix it in the future, right? And I think a lot of us have gut reactions to that, right? Like the way you fix it in the future is that you, you know, don't elect a fascist dictator to the presidency.
Might help.
Right. Yeah. But like, specifically, what should the police have done? Like, what security measures should have happened? Like, there's a lot of moving parts there, and so like, it's important for us.
Who disabled Ayanna Pressley's fucking alarm system?
Yeah. Exactly. We have to get to the root causes of these things because it's important. And the Republican Party et al. Has decided, maybe not et al., there was like six or seven House Republicans that voted for it, have decided to be against this commission for reasons that they have a hard time articulating.
Interesting.
Yeah. And the ringleader here would be Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell,
mm-hmm.
Who historically has taken a lot of flack for the entire Republican Party. He's really kind of the human shield here, specifically around the impeachment, the second impeachment, I should say, of former President Donald Trump. He decided that he was not going to vote for impeachment and then give him a tongue lashing on the Senate floor after. It was really a sight to behold. But he has decided to he has decided to continue his legacy of cowardice by publicly opposing this January 6th commission in the Senate. So it looks like they're going to filibuster it. It looks like the Republicans in the Senate are going to filibuster a bill to create a commission around what happened at our Capitol, the terrorist attack on our Capitol.
So here's what's really interesting about that.
Yeah.
This is kind of like your landlord saying they want to come over and like inspect the property and you saying no, and then saying, okay, when is the time that would work? And you saying no.
Right.
You can't. It's like, this is okay, that's technically you're right, but we're gonna file this under suspicious. This is not a pro landlord take, I should say. Maybe I should use a different metaphor, but like, so Lauren Boebert has like a weird relationship with what happened on January 6th.
Yeah.
Right. I don't even fully remember the details of it, but that's a big part of the reason why we decided to start paying much closer attention to her is from the get-go, she seemed to be a lot less critical of this attack than a lot of people were.
Right.
Right. She, I believe, was one of the Republican lawmakers who had given tours of the premises of the Houses of Congress a few days prior to the incident, which it was later discovered those tours contained some people who were part of the people storming the Capitol. Yeah. You know, and so like there's I think people, you'll say something like that and people will be like, what are you saying? She's a terrorist? What are you saying? She planned this whole thing? And I'm like, I'm not saying that, but whether she did or not, whether she had a hand in literally orchestrating this fucking terror attack or not, she needs to be investigated. Because if you whoopsie and leave the door open for the fucking bombers to come into the building and say, it wasn't me, I didn't know, it still needs to be investigated why you did that. It still needs to be investigated what your connection to them is. It still needs to be investigated why you are not interested in having it investigated, right? There's a lot about her rhetoric around this attack and her rhetoric generally and her attitudes generally and the way that she behaves. It, for example, like refusing to not bring her weapon into Congress immediately after the attack, refusing to go through a metal detector to make some sort of political statement. She's just, it's very clear that she's either consciously trying to circumnavigate safety measures for some sort of motive that she has, or what I think is more likely is that this is all sort of political theater for her. And she just is not, even though she was literally present during an actual terror attack, even though she was literally there, she just doesn't seem to feel like she needs to take these precautions or these safety measures seriously. She thinks that this is all sort of fun and games. And this was like a protest that got a little bit too rowdy.
Totally. Yeah. You're exactly right. I think like she is human Breitbart. Right. And I think it says a lot about the Republican Party that they have determined, they have done the calculus and they have determined that voting for this bill is not politically expedient. Mm-hmm. That says a lot about the Republican Party, that like voting to investigate like actual tyranny and insurrection against the United States government is not good politically for them.
Right.
Like, I don't know a more damning thing. Like, that like we have hit rock bottom.
Don't say that, Travis. Do you know how many times you said that during the Trump administration? That's a jinx. That is a curse.
We are subterranean, right? Like, we're
at the... We are plummeting towards Godzilla's hollow earth.
Oh man, Godzilla versus Kong, what a moment. But there's not much to say about it other than like, I can't believe it's sus as fuck. I can't believe that we're here, but also I can't believe 100% that like we are here. And my like advice, not that like anybody's going to listen to me that is a, you know, senator, but like my advice is like, let them filibuster it, make it hard for them. I would like to see an actual filibuster. Make fucking Mitch McConnell put on some tennis shoes and talk for 48 hours about why investigating a terrorist attack at the Capitol is not good.
Or talk about whatever, you know.
Right.
His fucking golf records or whatever. Like.
But like, it needs to be painful, right? They need to experience pain.
And sure.
And by pain,
I would like Lauren Boebert to be tired. I would like 12 hours of incoherent Lauren Boebert content. If we're not going to get an investigation of a state level crime,
right?
Because one of the political parties in the United States feels like it would incriminate them, which is what they are suggesting.
Right.
If we're not going to get that, at least give me some sound bites of Marjorie Taylor Greene going on the Senate floor and deeply, deeply misunderstanding her job again.
Yeah.
That's all we have at this point.
I want to watch C-SPAN and I want to watch Josh Hawley fucking squirm at 2 a.m. That's what I want to see. If he wants to filibuster, like, let's go. Like, let's
well, this is the thing, though. This is the thing, because we're kind of participating in it a little bit, right? Like, right. The American political system is disintegrated to the point of being such a literal joke
right.
that at a point, all we can hope for is content.
Right.
Right. At a point, you know, I think there was a breaking point during the Trump administration where everybody just kind of like fell apart. Right. And I think it was different for everybody. But I think everyone crossed that threshold where they were like, I'm watching the news not because I feel like it will prepare me for something. Not because it makes me feel better informed about something that I can do something about, but because on some sort of like sick, morbid level, my trauma response is to seek out like the grisly nonsense of what's going on to laugh at it.
Yeah.
Right. I think we all reached that pit of despair during the Trump administration. And I think it's important to remember that that pit is still alive and bubbling.
Yeah, totally. You're right. It is. It's kind of like a sick, twisted like world that we live in national American politics or just politics generally. I do think that like Democrats are a little afraid to call bluffs. Especially like right now where you have power. And so like call their bluff, like let them filibuster it. Let them filibuster every bill. Let's check their stamina. Like my current thesis about the Congress of the United States is that like doing the right thing is like a little overrated. I think there's just too much prognostication and people are playing like four steps ahead instead of like focusing on what's happening right now, including Democrats, but mostly Republicans, right? Like they're looking, Mitch McConnell's looking at this like January 6th commission and is like, oh God, is like voting for this like going to affect us electorally in a year and a half, right? Like that's the calculus that he is currently playing, and he's smart to do that. But like also the collective minds of the American public is like, our attention spans are like down the fucking tubes, right? Like,
and for good reason, because so many Americans are in a state of fucking crisis.
Correct. Yeah, but like directly affected by their electoral minds too are down the tubes, right? Like, how many times have the Republican Party shut down the literal government over bullshit? Right. Yeah. Like it cost us billions of dollars, like made the lives of everybody harder. And did it hurt them at the ballot box? No, it didn't. So like, just right. Do it. Like fucking Mitch McConnell, just vote for this thing. Like his conscience, like I don't want to give Mitch McConnell any credit, but like he knows what the right and wrong thing is with this one. Right. Like,
I don't know about that.
fair.
I don't know if Mitch McConnell has a moral compass in there. Right. I think Mitch McConnell is just like unflavored pudding all the way through. Like,
yeah. Well, I think Mitch McConnell is smart, right? Which is not like
he's conniving.
He's conniving in a strategic way, right? Like
right.
He knows what he's doing. He knows exactly what to say when Obama nominates Merrick Garland, and he knows exactly what to say when Trump nominates Amy Coney Barrett, right? Like he knows what the fuck he's doing, mm-hmm. right? Like Donald Trump, not smart, not a smart person, but he had Mitch McConnell. Right. And here is another piece on Mitch McConnell's chessboard, this January 6th though, right? Like he is looking at the climate. He's looking at like the voters. He's looking at, you know, everything. And he's determining that like the calculus says, I am not like, we should not vote for this, which again is pretty damning. And I think there's an interesting conversation to be had about like the influence that the politicians have versus the influence that the voters have. I do think that the Republican Party is a little too beholden to their voters, which is a conversation we can have later. But I think his calculus is right, which again is like fucking sucks. Like that's shitty. That is the reality of where we're at. And I think that's pretty fucking depressing, mm-hmm. but Mitch McConnell is smart enough to realize that like that is the vote that he needs to dictate to the rest of his caucus in the United States Senate.
Right. I mean, I don't think we should unpack it during this podcast, right. but I think that it's worth asking the question, why are these people in politics? Why? Right. Why is Mitch McConnell in politics? Why is Mitch McConnell still in politics? What is he still getting out of this?
Right.
What is the purpose? What is the end game? Like, it seems more transparent for people like Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene, right? Like, these right. those people are, they're starting a career. They're getting visibility. They're building a base, right?
Building a Twitter following.
They're building a Twitter following, right, that they're going to probably later turn into some sort of reactionary news network career.
Yeah.
Right. And so, but like, why doesn't Mitch McConnell get in the back of a limousine, go back to Kentucky, and finish decomposing? Like, why? What are you getting out of this? What is driving this? Why? What for? What for? I don't understand.
I don't either. Can I just tell you, I forgot limousines existed until literally last week. I was on a run. I saw one on Spear Boulevard. I was like, holy shit, a limo.
Yeah, people do that. That's a thing.
Yeah.
There's so much shit that I forgot existed during COVID. Right. Oh my god, I went to an antique store last week and I was like, whoa, this is a thing.
Yeah.
Oh my god,
I lamented this to you already on Marco Polo, but I forgot that like Target just like retail grazing was a thing, and I was a victim of that today. Everyone. Yes. I bought a waffle maker. What the fuck?
What did you go there for?
Face wash and Q-tips.
Okay, that is not
okay. I don't at me, everybody, but yes, I clean my ears with Q-tips. Okay, I know it's not good for me, but like I can't stop doing it. Okay.
You can use other things to clean your ears that are better.
I don't
want to
do that.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
I'm still too scared to use Q-tips. It scares me.
Oh really? Like you don't want to get the earwax buildup?
Oh God, no! It's scary. It's yeah. What if I slip and stab myself in the eardrum?
Oh, in the ear, and then break your eardrum.
Yeah.
You imagine your eardrum as like a snare drum, which is like easily penetratable, or do you like?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's
is
not.
Is that not what it is? Oh.
No.
Yeah. No, I thought your eardrum was like a membrane.
I don't think it is, but I don't. I've never taken it.
Are we gonna talk about medical facts? I don't know if we're qualified to do that.
Human.
Oh no.
I'm seeing pictures I did not want to see.
Yeah, I'm glad you Googled this and not me.
Oh, yeah. See, a rupture occurs outside of the part that is accessible to you via Q-tip. It's still not good for you. So you are right to be skeptical of Q-tips. Mm-hmm. But also don't at me.
Fair.
Everybody.
Should we talk about what we're standing this week, Travis?
Yeah, we should. This is a segment where we end on a positive note. We're talking about standing this week. Do you want me to go first or do you want to go first?
Why don't I go first? Because I actually have one.
Okay.
For the first time. Yeah, I'm Sorry. Actually prepared. Okay, so most of what I am standing is going to be YouTube. Most of the time, the things that I'm standing will be things that I find on YouTube.
Oh, I thought you meant YouTube.com, period. That's weird.
No. This is a specific thing on YouTube. It is the YouTube series that takes place at Mapperton Estate in Sussex, England. If you're interested in Mapperton Live, that's what it's called, Mapperton Live. If you are interested in the sort of HGTV style wealth porn, like... Yes. Renovation story, like people take you through their giant house and talk to you about their mega pool.
Love.
Kind of shit. Go ahead and watch this. It's one of those things that's like, it's relaxing if you can get beyond the disgust of how absolutely wealthy these people are, because like it's a relatively wholesome family, but for the fact that, like, you know, the for example, they have like a 14-year-old son who's like really into animals, and he's like, look at this tortoise, he's from the savannah and he likes it to be about 45 degrees centigrade, and you know, like, it's really cute. Except then the little 14-year-old boy is like, here's my 18-foot yacht that I bought with my spending money. And you're just like, do you understand how many people are poor in your country? It's fine. But
it sounds like I would love, though.
If you can silence that part of your brain, then it's worth a watch, and it's a very chill, relaxing sort of
we all need some escapism, you know.
It's a bit of escapism. Yeah. And you can indulge in a little bit of Schadenfreude too when their house gets really, really leaky because it's so old, because it's from the fucking 17th century. Right. And there's like the wife is American. And she's always walking around like, I'm used to big houses not having leaks. This is crazy.
It's very Downton Abbey, it sounds.
I have a nuanced opinion of this show. Like, I'm not endorsing every person in it. I'm not saying that it's a depiction of the ideal world, but it's
aesthetic, though.
Like, it is aesthetic. It is a nice, you know, like, get your knitting, brew some chamomile, turn on Mapperton Live. Yeah. And learn about how they've decided to donate one of the fields on their estate to be like turned into a wildlife sanctuary, and they're so excited about it. It's very cute. What is your thing that you're standing this week, Travis?
So the shuffle gods have blessed me this week.
Okay.
Every once in a while I like to engage in chaos and just hit shuffle on all songs.
Mm-hmm. Which is how many songs?
It's a lot. It's mostly the entire works of Bach, if I'm being honest.
Do you even have a ballpark? Like, if you pulled open iTunes right now, how long would it take? How long would it just be spinning rainbow wheel at you before it was like 28 million songs?
A lot. I add albums that I've not listened to my library, like, I just in anticipation of listening to it. There's, do you know how much fucking music is on my Apple Music that I just don't like? Just because I am like, oh, I need to listen to that. And then I listen to it. I'm like, that was okay. And then I just never remove it from my library. Yeah, it's a problem. I should probably get organized a little bit. But the Shuffle Gods did bless me this week. And they gave me the remembrance, the nostalgia of all the way back to 2020 when I listened to Carly Rae Jepsen's album dedicated Side B. For context, Carly Rae Jepsen gave us dedicated in 2019, her like fourth studio album, which was incredible. And then she gave us a side B in 2020 during peak pandemic. And let me tell you, that shit like got me through. Like, it is just like upbeat, great pop music. I think a lot of people like associate Carly Rae Jepsen with like Call Me Maybe, and just like her being like a like earworm and like just like a meme, really, like pop music meme. But she's actually like an incredible songwriter. And if you have not engaged in listening to Carly Rae Jepsen post Call Me Maybe, I definitely recommend that you do so. Her songwriting is like top notch. She made my, in 2020 in January, I did a top 100 songs of the 2010s decade playlist. Four songs of hers made it, one being in the top five. So like that's how much reverence I hold for Carly Rae Jepsen. And so I definitely recommend listening to Dedicated Side B, but just like her entire discography. She's incredible. Canadian queen.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's who I'm standing this week. Thank you, the Shuffle Gods, for reminding me of her.
I do that every year on New Year's. I go on Pandora and I hit shuffle all to try and figure out like what to set the tone for the year.
Yeah. Crystal, you might be the only person left on this earth that uses Pandora. How do you?
I might be.
I
can't not. I have, do you know how many, like, I have stations on there that I have like delicately curated since like 2005.
Yeah.
I like, how else am I supposed to get the perfect blend of Death Cab for Cutie and Irish folk music in one station? It's perfect.
Pandora did get me through my undergrad, I will say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I will forever be grateful.
Well, folks, thank you for joining us for our very first podcast, the first one we've ever done. We've never done this before.
Yeah, we've never done it before.
Wow, it's been so nice. I mean, it probably sounds like we've never fucking done this before.
It probably does, yeah. We're fucking amateurs.
Right. We're solid amateurs. We're solidly within the amateur category.
We are, yeah.
Hobbyists.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, just a disclaimer. This is not news.
Fact check your shit.
Right, yeah. Fact check your shit. Except the breaking news that you should get from this podcast is that you should listen to Carly Rae Jepsen because she's fucking dope as fuck. So.
Yeah, okay. I'll retweet and thus endorse that.
Yeah. Anyways, yeah. Crystal, what are your parting words? We usually end with like call to action or like a wisdom, some sort of wisdom.
Ooh, shit. Call to action or wisdom.
Don't let your dreams be dreams, everyone.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Correct. Yeah, that is a good one. You're right. Okay. Do the thing.
Please be okay.
Yeah. Go outside. Okay. That's my call to action. Go the fuck outside. Okay.
Yeah. Genuinely. I mean that in the most loving way, but I do scream that at a lot of people on the internet.
Yeah. Yes.
Touch some grass.
Yes. Take a walk, go for a run, like just like anything.
Sunlight.
Right.
Your body needs it.
Your body does need it. Literally.
Your brain needs it. I need you to get out of your house.
Yeah. 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 We've reached the peak onlineness for people, I think.
Yeah.
So go the fuck outside. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
Go outside.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
Love you. Bye.